I think most of you have seen how we've been trying to track the war on food. No joke, there is a war on food, and it's going to get worse. There have been more recalls and FDA warnings about food than I have ever seen in my life just in this last year. I can't believe how many there are. Not a week goes by, it doesn't seem, when there isn't a warning put out about some particular food that has been withdrawn or otherwise termed don't buy and don't consume. This is not an accident. And Misha Popoff, our food wizard, is back with us tonight. We're going to talk about that. And does this lead to starvation? Does this lead to food shortages? Yes, it does. Unless there are a lot less people around, and then you kind of another issue to worry about. Misha, are you there? Can you hear me okay?
Here, Jeff. Yeah, and they're really overplaying their hand, I think.
It's laughable, some of the things. They're stupid. They're not even intelligent food recalls or warnings. They're just dumb. It's really ridiculous. That's my take. Now, you're a pro. I'm not, but I'm a consumer, and I have to wade through the artificially loaded and laced foods that they sell us as nutritious and like everybody else. And these things that are being recalled are being recalled when there are probably 50 or 100 other reasons the food ought to be recalled for openers because of the ingredients on the label. There's poison, toxins in there. And yet they're doing the opposite. They're claiming these foods are dangerous for reasons that are way down the list of importance. Anyhow, go ahead.
Yeah, especially if you cook your food, you know?
Absolutely.
It's just the craziest thing. Now, if you like raw veggies, you're fine. I mean, I guess if it's organic, there's a risk of improperly composted manure. But that's surprisingly rare. There were cases we're talking years ago where there was improperly composted manure used on various organic crops. You might remember pomegranate seeds from Turkey, of all places, because we don't grow enough pomegranates here in the USA. And it turns out they weren't. You have to fully compost fully, and then of course the trick, and here's where you need some intelligence on the farm. A lot of people have backyard compost piles. Well, if you try to play it too safe, well, then it's not compost anymore. It's just dirt because the nitrogen and phosphorus leaches out. The nitrogen goes up into the atmosphere and the phosphorus goes down into the dirt below your compost pile. But anyway, if it's Jeff, you know, they've monkeyed with health to the point where they can put things like heart health on a box of Cheerios. Heart health. What does that mean? It's meaningless, but it's a label that they have to qualify for with the, I don't know if it's the USDA or the FDA. And Cheerios are heart health. And you're right. There's so many things that are just upside down, like the food pyramid, for instance. It's literally upside down. You shouldn't eat. There's no way you should be eating that much grains. Grains are animal feed. A bit is okay and better if it's whole grains. In any case, they've monkeyed with all this. And then you're right. Now they're bombarding us with all these recalls. And if I may, when it comes to chickens, it's amazing. I know you don't eat eggs or poultry, but
I know I do eat eggs. I eat organic eggs, free range. Yeah.
Hey, there you go. Now get this. America goes through 40 million eggs a week. Uh-huh. And that seems, at first you're like, wait a minute, did Misha put the decimal in the wrong spot? No. Here's how it works out. There's a half a billion laying hens, not meat birds, just laying hens. There's a half a billion, 500 million in America. And they killed 100 million of them. We've talked about that almost every week since Christmas, haven't we?
And basically for no reason. I don't buy their reasoning at all. Do you?
No, not in the least, because it's the flu. The flu, Jeff. That's all it is.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And so it's quite common to lose animals. The bottom line is, if your flock wasn't healthy, they would stop laying. If they're stressed or unhealthy, like if they literally if something, some percentage, 5 or 10% of your laying hens had bird flu, your egg production would just plummet. But instead of waiting for that signal, right? And still, then you don't go kill like 10,000 laying hens in one afternoon with gas. You don't do that. But instead of waiting for that signal, they just go, as you know, they're doing the PCR test. They're testing farm workers and the birds and dairy cows. And they really decided that it's going to be eggs and dairy. And that's what they've been going after on that front.
PCR is no test. It's a ridiculous thing to even talk about using as a test. It's not designed for that. It's a research tool. It's yes. not. Anyway.
Yeah, was it Kerry Mullins, God rest his soul, old surfer dude with more brains than
killed,
all of them.
I think they killed him. I bet on it at this point, frankly. He died very conveniently right before the rollout of this whole COVID bioweapon attack on humankind. And he knew. He said, you can't use my work. He got a Nobel for it. You can't use it as a test. It's not suitable. It's not designed to be a test for COVID infection. Anyway, crazy.
Yeah, and like RFK Jr., to his credit, he's gone kind of wobbly on Israel. And I think he's even said he doesn't care about the mRNA vaccine. He's kind of gone neutral. He's not for it, but he's
He's under tremendous control and pressure. And RFK, left to his own devices, would be doing a much different job. I believe that anyway. That's my take.
I do too. And so it's that juggling act where, okay, he decided I need to be on the inside to make a difference. So he has, it's politics. But I was going to say, I think Kerry, I might have called him Terry a minute ago. I think it's Kerry Mullins.
Kerry Mullins.
Yeah, that's what it is. RFK had a standing offer for Fauci to debate him anytime, anywhere, and the son of a bitch never took him up on it. And so I think that's quite...
Right. Yeah. No, it's so much different than most people. They just don't understand. They don't have a chance. They're fed a diet of confusion at best and half-truths at worst. They don't get the whole truth. Kerry Mullis was a great biochemist. He was terrific. He discovered, he invented the polymerase chain reaction technique, PCR, if you will, PCR. He shared the 1993 Nobel Prize in Chemistry with Michael Smith and was awarded the Japan Prize in the same year. Mullis died under strange circumstances. They said he had pneumonia and he died. It's pretty easy to induce that. They didn't want him around saying you can't use the PCR to determine COVID infection or COVID status. It's not that kind of a tool. At any rate, he was a good man, and thank you for mentioning him.
Yeah, and we all carry all of these things. So back to these food recalls for, you know, you got your top three, E. coli, salmonella, and listeriosis.
Yeah.
All food has all of them in it, and the only question is, does it reach a point of what's called critical level? And then then when you eat that food, even if it does reach what the FDA says is critical, it's time for a recall. Well, if you or me eat it, we're fine. It's the elderly and the young, because then they have their own threshold to that critical level. And none of that is taken into account. It's just, boom, recall. And then, of course, as we've discussed, Jeff, they get insurance or a government bailout or both.
Oh, yeah. The farmers, maybe an emotional reaction, but it's all money to them. And if they lose a million, half a million hens, they're going to get compensated, right? They don't lose really any money in the deal. They get compensated. So I don't know. I'm sure they're angry about the duplicity from this government, and they know there's a lie. But they're not like put out on the street. They're still in business. No.
And Jeff, I guarantee they're made to sign some sort of non-disclosure.
Oh, if you're going to get paid, what, each hen is worth whatever, I don't know, a couple of bucks at least.
Well, no. A laying hen's worth about, like, it's probably different for a farmer. But for you and me, you want to buy a mature laying hen, it's going to be $50 or $60.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. They're not, and that's, they've gone up slightly. Probably 4 or 5 years ago, you could get a mature laying hen. See, because you get a pullet, or preferably a chick, and you're going to feed that thing for, I think it's five or 6 weeks before you get a single egg.
Right.
And then they start laying, they just give you one every few days. But when a laying hen in her prime, yeah, she's worth easily, it's the same as like a dairy cow is worth like $50,000. No farmer's going to sell you his dairy cow, but if that's, you know, that's what she's insured for.
Well, on the other end, though, all the laying hens and all the dairy cows end up going into hamburger and KFC, right?
Mm-hmm.
When they're done, they're all used as meat, I think, later on, and then mixed with other chickens and cows.
The dairy cow, definitely, because hamburger is hamburger. The laying hens, they don't have a lot of good meat on them. Most of them just go for the old soup, OXO cubes and soup base. They're now for farms, what people are getting in their backyards or what we got when I was growing up, it's a dual purpose. A meat bird that does lay eggs after 6 weeks. You know, there's some...
6 weeks, that's awfully young, isn't it? For a chick to lay eggs?
A meat bird, Jeff, is probably going to slaughter after 8 or 9 weeks. So it doesn't take long.
Okay, so wait. All right, a meat chick is slaughtered at 9 weeks, 8 to 9 weeks.
It's pretty quick. You'd be surprised.
And heads on that. They're growing awfully fast, aren't they? That's damn quick to get a mature bird where they want maximum meat on it. I would think 9 week old chick can have enough meat on it to warrant its processing as food? That's very interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, you got to remember, when you're feeding an animal, it's a 10 to 1. 10 to 1, 10 pounds of feed for 1 pound of meat. So even if you could get, you know, a meat bird to reach, say, 6 pounds instead of five, that's 10 more pounds of corn. And so, yeah, they have... See, like hogs in medieval times, they would grow hogs to be 800 pounds. They couldn't even walk.
Wow.
We decided now that a marketable hog is 160 to 190 pounds. That's just arbitrary. Right. We, you know, then the pork chop fits on your plate. And that's, we could have gone to 250 or 300. We're not even halfway to what a pig is capable of. And so, and that's why we slaughter steers usually before their second birthday. Then, the T-bone steak that's on your plate nicely.
It's a hell of a birthday present.
Uh-huh. It sure is. But when I worked in the meat department, the bull who didn't get castrated, so he's not a steer, they always end up, that's for your lean ground beef. And we would get a big box, big cardboard box held together with twine. It would come in on a forklift, and each box contained an entire deboned bull who once had the duty of, you know, impregnating all the cows, whether it was a dairy farm or a meat farm. In there, you could recognize cuts of meat, like a round roast, which probably as big as a football if you go buy a round outside round. Well, it was as big as a medicine ball in this boneless bull box.
Got it.
We had a big meat hook. You'd yank it out. And you had to cut that thing up like five or six slices, or it wouldn't go through the grinder. You'd drop it into the grinder, and it would just sit there rolling over and over and over. The teeth couldn't grab it. But, we slaughter animals for our convenience, not to maximize their growth potential, to answer your question. Back to the chickens. Plus, also, they've bred them now. If they don't slaughter them, they can't walk anymore. You get breast meat, you know, at restaurants and such. Just this huge breast. It's like you think, wait, did they mix it up? That looks like a turkey breast. And no, it's a chicken. Well, how did that chicken walk? Well, they don't. Their last few days before they're hauled off to the slaughter, they're just sitting there. Yeah.
Well, okay. Now.
Yeah.
What we see is I think, an obvious effort to drive up food prices. That's number one. And number two, they're ultimately going to be issues with food to the extent that we're going to be, some people are going to go hungry. There may not be enough food in this over a period of time. Tell us how you see it playing out. And who's calling the shots on this one? What do you think?
Well, I hope, geez, am I naive? I hope with Trump in office, things might change. Nothing changed in agriculture when he got in the first time, unfortunately. But if he, you know, so here they are, they're going after the government inefficiency with DOGE.
Yeah.
Well, what are you guys waiting for? Get over to it's the FDA and the USDA for our food. Also, you have the EPA. They meddle in it. EPA is always making life difficult for farmers. Now, what's going on? Like, you might remember under Obama, if a farmer, dug a pond onto his land to catch water for his livestock to drink or for his own household use, that was suddenly a violation of EPA guidelines. They turned every body of water into a navigable body of water. So every ditch, every pond.
Oh, this is, that's crazy.
It is.
That's
insane. They did it knowing that they would just bankrupt any farmer who fought them. Okay, so now under Trump, these guys aren't stupid over at the EPA. They're laying off. And you think maybe Trump's guys would be smart enough to say, okay, we know you're laying off, but we're still going to make sure you never do this again. Because navigable waters are supposed to be waters you can, you know, take a boat onto. But they reclassified every pond, every ditch. Even if you wanted to drain water from your land, you dig a ditch down to the nearest roadway where there's a municipal ditch to drain a field. Uh-huh. That wasn't allowed. They were suing farmers all over. So, yeah, you got for food, it's USDA and, of course, the FDA, the Food and Drug. But even the EPA, they get their nose in there. And, yeah, these guys all have to be reined in. And I don't know that the only hope, Jeff, is that if the whole of government gets reined in. And now I know I am indeed being hopelessly optimistic. You can stop me now. That's the only hope, because when they go after these things, they go after, rightfully, gay dance classes in Nairobi. And, you know, $40,000 or $400,000, uh-huh. Whatever. These ridiculous things. And uh-huh. And they're not too worried about food. See, we still have a surplus of food, even though they killed. Think of that, Jeff. They killed 20% of the laying hens. Meanwhile, but by comparison, I think Canada has maybe killed 10,000 birds. Again, they shouldn't have killed any of them. If a bird has the flu, you just wait for it to die and haul it out. Replace it. Yeah, you know, that gets into the whole thing. Are diseases really contagious? All that. But in any case, Canada's maybe it's in the thousands, and Mexico too. So on either side of us, they have not even killed a fraction of what we've gone through. So it's sadly, it's still going on. But like I said, in regards to the EPA, I think the people running those departments, they know, okay, there's a new sheriff in town. And so they kind of back off, and then they don't. They don't, you know, it's like whack-a-mole. They're not sticking their head up to be noticed, and so they're ignored, and then they carry on their merry way.
Interesting. Well, all right. So where are we in terms of food? This country never had food problems before. There was plenty to go around. Where are we, and where is it going? And who's really calling the shots in this game? Probably the same old crew, huh?
Ultimately. Oh, yeah, that's just it. The private food guys, one of the things RFK Jr. pointed out was how the pork industry was taken over beginning in the 90s.
Right.
They drove all the independent guys out. That happened with poultry even before that. And I think that's why they're going after dairy, because even though dairy farms are huge here in America, like a big dairy farm in Canada would be a couple hundred, maybe 500 head. Here it's 10,000. You can't even be a dairy farmer unless you got 10,000. You might remember there was that barn that burned down, and something, I think it was 8,000 cows died in one barn. That was almost 2 years ago now. But in any case, still with those massive operations, there's still enough redundancy in the dairy system, which is, again, why I think they decided to target it. Just like there's still enough redundancy, even though these laying hens, there'll be barns with or farms with a million laying hens in five or six different barns. And there's enough redundancy and still enough independence that the egg poultry business and the dairy had to be, in their minds, had to be gone after. And other than that, yeah, they already control pretty much grain has been controlled for decades, all the grain, which is your feed for the animals and for us. But this raises the issue that I mentioned to you in the email. We had to go to Austin this week, the capital of Texas. And boy, did I get a wake-up call, Jeff. We were there probably 8 years ago, soon after we moved down here. We moved down here 11 years ago. Uh-huh. And our first stop, we had to go to the streets because we had to go get our visas for Paraguay. We're still working on that, as we've talked about before. So we had to go down to the Texas consulate, or was it the American consulate?
How's that looking, just real quick? Are you making progress? Are you running into weird obstacles? What's happening?
No, it's going very well. We could be there as long-term visitors right now, but we came back here. But yes, the whole thing is going smoothly. We have our contact down there who helped us when we were down there. And so he's the one we had to get some documents notarized, and then we sent them to him. Yeah, we could be there already, but we chose to stay here. And then the process proceeds without us. And yeah, I think I've explained, they're kind of backwards down there. They have computers, but we went to buy a postage stamp once, and it took like 20 minutes. They had to get out the triplicate carbon copy receipt for us and all this just to buy a stamp. You know, the post office isn't computerized down there. Immigration is computerized. But yeah, they're very good people, and they're not trying to slow anything down. That's just how long it takes. So yeah, it was in August, you might recall, that we had gone down there in person to start you have to be there to start the process. And so now we're just tying up some loose ends. So it is going well. And good. Yeah, Jeff, no shortage of food down there.
No. I got that. You made that really abundantly clear.
Yeah.
That's the land of plenty.
It is, and always will be, again, because as I was just mentioning with farming, there's even more redundancy down there. That's what you want. That's your food security, is to have as many people with smaller operations rather than one or two big ones. But so, yeah, so we go down to Austin, and we hadn't have been there, as I say, for about 8 years. And our first stop was to get groceries, and we went to HEB, H-E-B. I guess that's a Mexican retail outlet doing business. And then also Walmart. And, Jeff, I'm not kidding. It was about 80% non-white people. And right away, alarm bells are going to go off, Jeff. I know not with you, but people are, ooh, what do you mean? What's wrong with that? A little diversity. 80%. Uh-huh. And I thought, well, it's because it's after hours. We didn't get there till the evening, and we had to buy groceries. We stayed in a B&B, so we had to get our own groceries, which is always cheaper.
But that B&B, how did you arrange that from here? A B&B down there? How interesting.
Yeah, not a big problem. It's a nice house, and we even took our dogs with us so we wouldn't have to get anyone to take care of them. And they just wrecked.
Did they flew in baggage?
Or no, we drove down. It's almost 5 hours with traffic from here, from Dallas area. Well, my daughter's telling me it's only 3 hours, but she forgets we had to stop twice for the dogs. But so, yeah.
Comfort. That's called a comfort stop for your pets.
Oh, yeah. Comfort. Yeah, and you find a nice area for them to run around for a bit. Yeah. And they get back to the truck. So then we go the next day, we go to the consulate. And Jeff, we were the only white, my wife and I were the only two white people there. And that's counting the staff. Now, what does this have to do with food? None of these people are working in the food industry. You know, that's supposed to be one of the big things, right? Well, they pick your vegetables. Do you like salads. Well, how would you like it if you didn't have lettuce anymore? And I'm sure there's still some people doing that. Ironically, it's probably the same people that were doing it 20 and 25 years ago. You know, legitimate immigrants working, yes, at the jobs Americans won't do. Yes, there's some truth to that. When it comes to all the other jobs, though, that they're using these immigrants to replace us with, and you can include Indians in that along with the Hispanics, no, they're just not willing to pay a living wage. But yeah, probably the vegetables probably are still, and none of those people would have been at the Walmart when we got there in the evening, nor the following morning at the consulate, which is just two doors down from the Capitol. Oh, and then we went to visit the Capitol again, full of like 80-85% non-white people. And so, yeah, my point is none of these people are working the way we were told they are, you know, that they're here to work in ag. And then on the trip there and back, of course, we're just driving through endless flat prairie. Most of the winter wheat is already coming up nice and lush and green. And yeah, there's so many old abandoned farms that you can even see them from the freeway. They've all been bought out. The old house and the yard are still there, but all the land is corporate now. And they don't need anyone. They'll need like 12 or 15 guys to run what used to be 40 or 50 farms. And, you know, fair-sized, good farms, not just like when people first homestead, they got 80 acres. But I remember like 30, 40 years ago, a good-sized grain farm was 1,000 to 5,000 acres. And yeah, a man and two or three boys, maybe a hired hand, they'd run the whole farm. Well, now you'll have 50,000 acres, and it'll be and probably mostly white guys, ironically, driving the implements. And they have the biggest implements you can buy. They'll be seeding 60 feet at a time with an air seeder, whereas when I was growing up, we had a 20-foot, it's called a one-way, a disker seeder. So yeah, they're doing three times as much. And the tractors, they're like army tanks now. I used to be impressed with farmers in our neighborhood who bought tractors that were over 100 horsepower. And so we started calling that buck and a quarter or buck and a half for 125, 150. Yeah. And then all of a sudden some guy, did you hear, he got a 200 horsepower. Never mind. They got 800 horsepower now, literally like tanks. And they have rubber treads on them instead of tires.
800 horsepower.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. And that's what you need if you want to pull 60 feet of air seeder. Remember, it's dragging shovels through the ground. The hose goes into the ground behind a shovel, like a spade, a Y-shaped shovel. And it's very, very minimal disturbance of the soil. So air seeders are better than what I grew up. We're using a disker. It actually turns the soil, which isn't as good. But in any case, yeah, you need a lot of horsepower. And they go up from there. But anyway, as you can see, they've eliminated all of the farmers. Any farmers, so-called farmers left, they're basically hired hands now. And back to the city of Austin, none of these Hispanics, there was a lot of Indians there as well. I guess you don't expect the Indians to be doing those types of jobs that Americans won't do, like, you know, farming and picking vegetables. It was supposed to be the Hispanics, and there they are, you know, and it wasn't just because it was after hours. The first day we got there, it was evening. So, you know, maybe they all got off work. Again, if they were working, those were jobs that used to be done by Americans. But no, the next day, as I say, we're at the Capitol, full of Hispanics, a few Indians, and hardly any white people. And Jeff, last point, there were two protests going on at our state's capital. One for immigration, of course. So they're all non-white. And then one for the teachers union. And I couldn't figure it out at first, because Texas teachers are usually pretty happy. They're not militant. And then I figured it was for the NEA, the National Education Association, that Jimmy Carter started. And I had no idea why they were at the state capitol protest, but that's what it was. They were, I don't know, I guess it was the nearest stop for them rather than going all the way to Washington to protest Trump, because I guess he might hopefully get rid of the National Education Department, whatever it's called.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah, so there they were. And
Department
and
of Education, DOE.
Yeah. And that crowd had a bit more white people in it, but they all had matching T-shirts, you know, with their logo emblazoned on it. And yeah, as I say, Jeff, we had been there 8 years ago. When we were there 8 years ago, no store had any plastic bags. That was, you'd buy groceries and they'd just push them down the ramp and leave. Yeah. No bags. Couldn't even buy them if you wanted.
No, we should. There shouldn't be. People should have their own cloth bags. There shouldn't be plastic or paper. We don't need it.
We didn't know that the cashier is checking our food and she's just pushing it down. Usually there's someone there. Nothing. And I remember that 8 years ago. But now, mm-hmm. The Walmart, they'll give you bags if you ask for them. So that was an improvement, I thought.
They don't charge you? They just give them to you? Or do they charge you a couple pennies?
No, they didn't. They didn't charge us. In fact, to Paraguay, they charge you. They charge you for every plastic bag. But they're good. Really good plastic bags. And like you said, cloth bags. Well, when we were down there for a whole month, and the bags would last. So you'd buy them. They were like 15 cents each. But they'd last. They were like very durable. You could reuse them, just bring them back to the store the next time you went. So that was terrible.
Now, okay. When you guys move down there, Paraguay.
Yeah.
You've got a plan, and if it's private, don't tell me. But what are you thinking about maybe doing down there? You want to go back into farming, right?
Isn't that yeah. True? Yeah, and the good thing about that is land is still very affordable down there, so you don't have to worry about, you know, leveraging a big mortgage or something. If you start getting into equipment, of course, you're going to have to probably borrow some money. But you could start out with a subsistence farm to be your goal, just to be self-sufficient, and then build from there. You can't
do
that.
You're not going to show up with an 800-horsepower John Deere 40-foot tall tractor.
No. When we were down there, I saw it's the sugar cane. That's the big crop down there. There's a lot of grain and wheat, of course.
Not much you have to do with sugar cane, right? Once you plant it, it just kind of goes.
Yeah, it's a grass. You never reseed it. It grows like bamboo, 15 feet high. They cut it like corn. So their swath is maybe 8 feet wide. And they have to go so slow because they're taking in all this mass, and then they haul it over to the rendering factory. I don't even know how the process works, but they have huge trucks. They'll just overload them with sugar cane, and it'll be like a 10-ton truck, you know, like not a semi, a single frame truck, and the sugar cane will be sticking out the back like 20 feet. It's just,
yeah, you told me that. That's funny. Yeah.
Yeah. And they go, then they disappear behind. It's funny. The sugar processing facilities, they all have razor wire around them. And I don't know if it's because people were stealing sugar or what, but they're very high security. But yeah, we could get into farming again. And the only other place in the world you could do that is probably Russia. They'll give you land in Russia, whereas in Paraguay you got to buy it. But
I've heard that.
If that's your goal,
are you leaning towards sugar cane? Do you like that idea?
No, grain is. I know grain, and I could I could do it organic and not a problem. I don't know anything about sugar cane except for the fact that you don't have to reseed it. That is very appealing. But I suspect when I saw the harvesting equipment, it looks like the same type of thing they harvest corn with. The guy is sitting up like 12 feet off the ground so he can see where he's going. And that little machine with an 8-foot swath is probably like $500,000. It's very highly specialized.
Ouch. Yeah. All right. Now, I have another question. Because of the expositions we've done about glyphosate forced ripening, I still have my doubts about gluten. It contains no gluten. Gluten was never even talked about when I was a kid. Now it's a big deal. And I'm wondering if gluten took the fall for glyphosate toxicity.
I think we've discussed this before, and I think you're right it retains it somehow. Like the gluten is, you know, it's gooey. It's the stuff that makes the bread.
Yeah, I don't think gluten is the villain here. I think it's glyphosate.
We've been eating gluten for thousands of years, and the reason in the Bible, like Jesus will be chastising someone for saying, "Oh, you just want the easy life." And he'll list things that you want, like jewelry and wheat and other things. Like wheat was a precious commodity back then. Poor people couldn't eat wheat. Only rich people could. And I think I mentioned to you, like up where I grew up, we would say wheat is king. And there was even a hockey team called the Brandon Wheat Kings. And now wheat is so common. And it is true, we have probably overbred it. Wheat, like most of our crops, just wouldn't survive one season without us babying it. But to the credit of, I don't know who, but there's no GMO wheat. And the irony is then that means you can desiccate it. And that's why oats are also desiccated. Barley isn't desiccated because the barley farmer is hoping to make brewing grade for beer. And if he doesn't make that, well, then he's going to get less than half the price per bushel, maybe even a third or a quarter. It'll just go for feed, because humans don't eat barley unless it's in beer. And if you want, it's called malting barley. You don't spray that. You even got to be careful how you're treating it during the season. The beer industry is very persnickety because they have to sprout it. So no matter how commercialized and chemicalized the beer industry becomes, you know, what's it, John McCain's widow, she used to own Anheuser-Busch. I'm sure they would do anything they could to cut corners by using any modern techniques they could, right? But the heart and soul of making beer is you have to sprout the barley. And it has to be sprouted. And so if you don't make that grade, then you're in trouble. And it goes for feed. So it's oats and wheat, which haven't been genetically modified. Ironically, that leaves the door open for them to be desiccated. And so that's the cruel irony. No, we've been eating it for thousands of years, and not
gluten,
a problem.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
I still think it's they're just hanging glyphosate toxicity on gluten. I think they're making it the fall guy. That's my guess anyway. It's possible, yes?
Yeah, I thought you were saying that there's actually some sort of chemical, biological connection. But yeah, I see what you're saying.
No. They're just blaming it.
Yeah. Gluten intolerance. And then so you'll go buy a loaf of what do they use? They make oat bread, but they still have to have wheat in it, and they make rice bread. And again, there's no gluten in oats or rice. None. You won't make a loaf of anything. It'll just be like it'll look like a pita shell when you're done. So they have to be putting some wheat in it, but I guess it's minimal. It's the minimal amount to still get a loaf out of it.
And then
you would be reducing that exposure to the glyphosate that was used. And it will be mostly wheat that'll have an inordinate amount because it's the most valuable of those cereal crops. Uh-huh. So they invest more money in force ripening it all at the same time to get it all off the field in time.
Well, so gluten, just for you out there worried about gluten, gluten may not be the problem.
Yeah.
Might not.
Another thing on that is especially up where we grow, you need 120 frost-free days for wheat. And that, so when you're coming down to the wire in the fall and the weatherman says there's a freeze coming in or snow, then that they force ripen it and get it off right away. And they'll even get it off when it's still not fully ripe. and put it in a grain dryer. Well, barley and oats, guess what? You only need 60 to 80 days. Most barley is closer to 60. So no problem. You have all this latitude in your fall harvest schedule. If a farmer is growing wheat and barley and oats on different fields, he doesn't even care about the barley and the oats. He's concentrating on the wheat. Now, he'll go ahead and take the barley and oats off first. Peas is another one that they're done in 60 days. So these are not a problem. And there's no incentive to desiccate them. If Mother Nature is playing along and it's mid-August, you still got lots of frost-free, warm days left. You're not worried. But your wheat crop, oh, no. Late August, if it still has a tinge of green to it, you're like, oh, no, we could get a... Again, especially up north, not down here, you're going to start thinking about calling the local ag guy to get the desiccator in. Just, no one desiccates their own crops. That's another thing. It's probably 99%.
You hire somebody to come in and spray glyphosate to desiccate the crops? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, they'll use a high voice sprayer or an air spray.
Yeah. Not so good.
And then those farmers are often also hiring a contract custom harvesting crew after the desiccation is done.
So it's all laid out. It's all like modules. It's modular farming, so to speak.
Yeah, it is. And the farmers that are still farming, well, they're taking care of the spring, get the field ready and then put the crop in. And if it's a Roundup ready crop, they might spray it themselves, because who cares if you're spraying, like, say, canola, you're going to spray that in June or July. What does it matter if you drive over it? Because it's just going to spring back up again. But it's in the fall. You can't be driving over your valuable wheat crop. So they get the high boy sprayer in. And if you've ever seen them, you could literally drive underneath one in almost any vehicle. You literally go right under it.
It's called a high boy.
Yeah. They're like, the guy's feet are 8 feet off the ground when he's sitting in the cab. And so that high is boy. Made. Yeah. So that he can steer the narrow wheels right between the rows and hopefully not trample any crop until he gets to the end and makes his turnaround. He's going to trample some of it. But yeah,
gotcha.
That's why most farmers can do their own early, like spring spraying and mid-season spraying with the Roundup Ready crops, but they'll get the contract crew in to do the desiccation. Yeah.
Wow. Well, all right. It's pretty well, it's gone. These independent contractors are plugged into quite a circuit then every year. They've got their circuit laid out. Right.
Yep. And then guys like Bill Gates, they were watching that until those guys matured as corporations to where they could handle, tens of thousands of acres. As you know, I think Bill Gates owns like 250,000 acres here in Texas alone. So do the Chinese, by the way. but yeah, you don't want to leverage yourself into that much land unless you know that there's companies there that can handle it for you. Because there's no way Bill Gates was going to sort of reinvent the wheel and hire a bunch of people.
No.
Tell us to do the seeding. I imagine he's probably hiring people to do that too, all on contract.
All right, how much glyphosate do we see in Paraguay? I mean, is the chemical aspect of modern contemporary agriculture in Paraguay like it is here?
I don't think it is. I sure didn't see it when we were there. Uh-huh. And again, the sugar cane, it's like bamboo. You don't have to, they don't even fertilize it. It just keeps growing.
Uh-huh. And
yeah, but we didn't see the part of the country that has the large scale grain, which is shipping grain, ironically, to Europe. Now that's good, because if Europe will take it, then it wasn't desiccated. And that's one of the things Trump is complaining about. Europe, they won't take our ag products. Well, no kidding. Mm-hmm. They don't do that in Europe. They don't desiccate standing crops. They do use Roundup. They do. But not like the way we do. They don't use it mid-season for the Roundup Ready. None of those are allowed. It's funny, Jeff. They're actually allowed, but it's such a nightmare to fill out all the bureaucratic permitting that no one does it. And then they certainly don't allow crops to be desiccated. And remember, here, you go ask a professional agronomist, and he'll tell you quietly under his breath, if you buy him a beer, Roundup is not an approved desiccant. But they use it anyway.
Yeah. But do they have something called an approved desiccant?
Yeah, there's a...
Or is it just Roundup under a different label?
No. There was, and it was rare. It was like in an emergency, if a crop wouldn't ripen in time, you could desiccate it. And yeah, I don't know which ones they are. But you're basically just spraying the crop to kill it. So I would imagine almost any herbicide would work. But yeah, Roundup is not an approved desiccant, and yet they're using it willy-nilly.
Willy-nilly.
Yeah.
It's an old Paraguayan expression, right?
That's right, yeah.
Well, I don't know. You'll have to, we'll watch this. Christmas in Paraguay will be interesting. Do a little research on Alfredo Stroessner. Paraguay was a German concern for many decades. They got in there early.
Stroessner, huh?
Stroessner. I believe he was the guy. I'm pretty sure. Let me look it up here. Stroessner. Stroessner. Alfredo Stroessner. Yes. Paraguayan army officer, politician, and then dictator who ruled as president of Paraguay from 1954 until his overthrow in 1989.
Alfredo
Stroessner. Right.
And I heard he was pretty cool. He didn't have a lot of people.
Was that cool or cruel?
Cool. He was pretty, and he would fire his top ranking people if they didn't perform. I saw like a 1950s documentary on him before we went, sort of get the lay of the land. Now the one thing with Paraguay, Jeff, that brings us back to the experience I just had in Austin. After they had a horrible civil war, I think back in the 1880s, and they killed 80% of the men, most of whom were, of course, Spaniards of Spanish descent. Mm-hmm. And the government after that had a policy of forced intermarriage, that you weren't allowed to marry a fellow Spaniard. The white people were forced to intermarry with the native population. So the country is very beige, I'll say that, but still a lovely people.
Beige.
Very beige.
A beige country.
Yeah, so this Stroessner guy, he looks like a sore thumb now. Even back in the 1950s, there were way more white people. The government was mostly white. Kind of like in Mexico.
It was European. You'd say white. These are Europeans. There were Germans that went in there and spoke Spanish and kind of took over. A lot of them.
Yeah, and they still have... That's the part we didn't get to. I'd like to go down there to the south of the country, a place called Hohenhoe. It's 90% German, and Germans are still coming there from Europe. And
that's
where the more of the large-scale grain farming is going on down in the south. But that's 6 hours from the capital where we stayed. So it's funny, you go to a country like that, you'd think, well, just rent a car and go down there. But it's very inconvenient with three kids, and we didn't make it. I've heard good things.
You did well. This is a big deal, a big move. So, yeah, we'll be interested to see how well you do down there. I'm sure you'll do fine. You could open up a John Deere used tractor business, right?
Yeah. Or, you know what I would do if it wasn't farming? I would sell Chinese cars down there. Because there's
don't
cars...
Don't tell me EVs, please.
No. EVs. They make... The Chinese make an entry-level car for $10,000 retail. You could sell those like hotcakes down there.
Oh, yeah.
And then higher-end cars. And they do have some hybrid cars. So they're half electric and half gas.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I didn't see any electric car. There's no... Paraguay has no infrastructure to handle that. Neither do we, by the way.
I agree. No, that's true. That's good. All right, my friend. Thank you for the update. I hope we covered everything. Good job, as always. Talk to you next time.
Food recalls. You're right, Jeff. Just don't believe it all. It's all hype.
No. Good. Good man. Thank you very much, Misha. All right. You be well. Take care.
You too, Jeff. Thanks for having me. Good night.
You betcha. Misha Popoff, one of the really, you asked for a voice to speak about food and agriculture. There's none better than Misha. All right. That's it for tonight. Back with you tomorrow, Friday. Take good care. Talk soon. Tomorrow night.